The Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.
It's Monday evening, it's 7 p.m. It's time for the DL debate.
Check this.
Hi, welcome one and all. Thanks very much for tuning in, wherever you are in the world. It's episode 14 of the DL debate. A few people listening in New York, I just want to give a mention to Andrew Duffy, Leslie McGettigan, the original big guy in the Big Apple, Kieran Keaveney, Rossi, but he played with Donegal, New York for most of his career out there. I hope you are keeping well, lads, and listening in. Also, Paul Hoosen, the McCool's man, over in Coventry at the minute, listening in. Hope to see you back in Donegal again sometime soon, Paul. On the show, folks, have some cracking guests the last few weeks, and this evening is no different. Two men with an immense history in the GAA and involvement in the GAA. We've got Donegal 92 hero and current senior team manager Declan Boder. But first up, we have Monaghan's Pat McEnany, for me, the best ref of his generation. How are you, Pat?
Brendan, doing good. Live and kicking.
Live and kicking, eh? No better man. Listen, Pat, fantastic to have you on the show. But I suppose from the off, you know, Monaghan, born and bred. I was just wondering, what's life been like growing up in one of the so-called weaker counties?
I know.
I don't want to knock you back early on.
When someone like you says that, that comes from a county with a couple of Irelands, I've got to bite my lip. You know, there's battles that you. You know you're going to win and win easy, but that's the opening statement by you. I just got to bite my lip and suck it up.
You're grand.
We love being the underdogs, by the way. We love being the county of a population of what, 60,000, and we keep that's boxing right. above our weight. We keep boxing above our weight all the time. So
we certainly do. I've none but respect for the Monaghan boys. They were always one of the toughest opponents you could meet. You know.
Yeah. Well, we maximize. I think over this past 10 or 12 years, I think we've always maximized ourselves, you know. But they're no different than any other county, Brendan. You know, you grow up, I was very fortunate. I had a brilliant childhood. I was one of nine, the second oldest. So there was five boys and four girls in our house. And the rule was that, the old school and was that the girls done all the work inside and the boys done all the work outside. And we were basically... we used to breed stock. We were never into milking. We were always into beef. Beef farming was our game, and we used to keep some pigs and that. And started off very small. We only had about maybe 40, 50 acres, maybe with a start off. I remember, you know, we always got fed though. You know, the old boy used to always run a bit of a garden behind the house, and we always got fed. And it was a rule of thumb, you know, that if there was work to be done, the boys always done it outside, and if there was football to be played, then there was no work. Football always came first, and so there was lots of times I used to be going playing football. Well, the old boy thought I was going playing football, but I was actually going seeing the girlfriend. But he reckoned I trained all the time. But if you're going playing football, he was a big fan of football, and we always had this rule around the house as well. My mother, great woman, passed away 3 years ago. But she was an only daughter, and she came from a milking background. But my dad used to be always trying to encourage him into milking because it was the weekly check and it was a very safe way of living. But dad had no interest in that because he'd been working 7 days a week on the farm. That means no trips to Crow Park on a Sunday and coming home at 9 or 10 o'clock. And that was my, you know, fantastic upbringing.
Pat, you obviously bother wee ladies chasing after you. That must have been the hardest side of your upbringing, all right. Huge football house, huge family. Nelson Field is right card off. Down at the bottom of the bottom initially in a real. As you said, the livestock were on the pitch as well as the players, I think. That was a completely different world to now, Pat. There's excellent facilities there.
I tell you, Devani, you'd make an excellent researcher. How did you get that name of Nelson?
You're worried now, Pat. You're worried because I know a few things about you. This isn't the Devani I was out in Australia with going flat to the board.
that is correct. I'm amazing you should remember that. That's where I started my juvenile football. And there was there was an electric telephone, there was an electric cable, I think they were either ESB or telephone cables, probably no telephones back then when I started, but there was a cable, it was an ESB cable going right across the pitch, and the amount of times the ball used to hit that, but the game just continued. You know, I was under 11 and 12 that time, because we used to, under 12, under 13, at that time, because Cardiff was never big enough, we didn't have enough juveniles, myself and Tom actually, I'll tell you a true story about the under 12s. We hadn't enough to, we only maybe had about five or six players playing for, at the time from Cardiff. It was a very small community at the time. And we used to play our under 12 football with Carrick McCross. And so one year we won the under 12 Kyle Cup, which was the Division 1. Myself and Tom and a fella called Brian Jones and Thomas Mann. There was about five of us used to come in. We won the under 12 Kyle Cup in Monaghan with a great man called Brother Gregory. And the following Saturday, myself and Tom played midfield for Shercock in the Cavan County Final under 12. We won it as well, below in Breffni Park. And that's a true story. So we won two under 12 Division 1 medals in the week, but one in Monaghan, one in Cavan. You wouldn't get away with that nowadays. No, you're right, Nelson's Field is where it all started for me.
And Pat, tell me, what coincided in the club, I suppose, the rise of the club for you, junior, intermediate, even the senior, was the five McEnany boys all involved. I mean, fantastic stuff. There was another Connolly family there, which was well represented in the team. And between the two families, nearly, you just took the club and rose it up. They must have been great times, Pat, because there's nothing like I suppose, either a big barn, no success or no success at all. And then the whole parish, which, of course, is right on the side of Carrick McCross, for anybody who doesn't know Cardiff, you're right next door to them. So the rise of the club, it must have been a brilliant time.
Fantastic time. You know, really, I remember the first junior title we won, and the five of us were playing, and it was full-back, centre-back, midfield, centre-forward, full-forward. We just were lined up the middle. Frank, of course, was playing very well at that time. That's was right. Second youngest. Frankie. Banty was the youngest. And
where did you play, by the way, Pat?
Normally on the 40. Normally I on the 40.
Playmaker?
Or centre-back. Centre-back was my favourite position because it was an easier position to play. And I used to love it then because Kevin Moran was my idol when he played for the Dubs and the centre-back. Right. And he used to make those rambling runs. And it was always a good, you know, that time, you know, before my time, it was, you know, the centre-back used to just man-mark. You didn't have attacking half-backs then while the whole game changed. And that was, you know, probably, you know, I had a good head for the game. I had two good feet, but I had no pace. That was where I fell down, really. But I was a good reader of the game. Yeah, going back to then times, like, I mean, when I came on the scene first with Cardiff, like, we were the worst team in Monaghan, us and Black Hill, who, of course, has rose to fame in this past. Like, we were the two worst teams in Monaghan. I remember as a 15 or 16-year-old, just being a sub on the Cardiff team, I think about 15. Tom was playing, he was 16, he was a year older than me. And we won one junior match in Monaghan, a junior league match. And the boys went on a session for about 3 weeks. That was the kind of, you know, that was the kind of stuff that we came with. And I remember Shercock is our local town. Like, we only live about 2 miles outside it. And they were putting fierce pressure on us at the time because we won an under 12 county title with them. And my dad and mum's shop in town, and used to be always on to my old boy, but, you know, need to transfer the two lads in. You'll have a bit of success in here.
Yeah.
But I never forgot me saying, hey lads, the club you're born into is the club you'll play for. And I never forgot those words. And then the whole thing turned around. Then when the five McEnanys came along and the Connollys, believe it or not, but all the Connollys are first cousins because my mum was Connolly. She was the only daughter, but she was Connolly. And she had five brothers. And so it was the Connollys and McEnanys made up about 10 or 11 of the team. And then the old boy managed us for a while. But I think 93, we won the junior title. And as you say, Brian, nothing beats, you know, I've been all around the world, I've refereed some of the biggest games that, you know, that possibly get to referee, but nothing beats. I remember that day clearly with my club when we won the five. Five of us were playing, we won a junior title, and then we won the intermediate title some years later, and we went senior, but we lost, I think, six games in the senior league by a point. You know, we just lacked that wee bit of experience, and we lacked that little bit of, we didn't have the numbers back then, but yeah, brilliant times.
Yeah, and Pat, you even flirted with a wee bit of a soccer career, which didn't go down too well in the house at the time. It's Downs GA House.
Geez, I'll tell you one thing, Devan, you have really done your research, man. Yeah, I quite enjoyed soccer. I was a big Tottenham fan. Still, I'm a big Tottenham fan. I go back to Steve Perryman, Alan Gilzine, Pat Jennings. I go back to those days.
Ricky Villa,
what a man, what a goal at Wembley. Then I used to fancy myself as Glenn Hoddle for a long time. I was the man in the middle of the field spraying passes all around the place. But that was me. But anyway, I got to go back to cut the long story. I didn't play soccer until I was about 15 or 16. And it was brilliant because it used to be like strictly during the winter. You know, it used to start up in September, October, and then you'd play right through to February and March. And it was a great way of keeping you in good shape, you know. And I used to love it. I used to love it because there was absolutely no pressure. You know, there was you just used to go out, play the game, enjoy it, and there were a great group of lads. But there was a guy there, a fella, and he's still alive, he's still in great, but he was a great man, a fella called Frank Rooney. He lives in Carrickmacross. And he was very good to me. Seven of him got on the best. But he asked me, I was kind of maybe, when Carrick Rovers were going well, if Cardiff started to play, I'd have missed the last two or three games of the season, done that for 2 years. And he came to me at the start of the season. He says, "Mac, we have a good team this year, and I need you to make a commitment here. If you're going to commit, I want you to commit for the full season." And I says, shook hands with Frank, and I says, "Frank, I'll do it. I'm only missing two games at Cardiff." I says, and that was about September, October. At the January GA meeting in Cardiff, who's appointed the manager of the football team? Only me, Elby. Man, you won it. So, yeah, that happened for one season, and myself and my dad swapped a few words for that, but I honored it. And I think I was about 19 at the time. I was young, but I told my dad, I've made a commitment to Frank Rooney, and I'm going to honor that commitment. And I did, you know, and something I'm very proud that I did do. I had a go against my dad, I honored Frank Rooney, and he was a great man, still is a great man. And I'm glad I made that decision.
Yeah, and listen, you're right, stick to your guns. It's horrible that pressure comes on you, Pat, because I've faced it myself a lot. Funny, you mentioned about the soccer. Sometimes I used to want to get away from Gaelic just to play the soccer. You know, remember one year in particular, I just the soccer was just, or the Gaelic was just destroying me. You know, we'd lost the championship Ulster final, and I actually went playing soccer almost as a cover just to get myself some time away. So I mightn't play a wee bit of league and that. I know everything's changed now and it was different then, but you're right, there was a real freedom of the weight wasn't there. Obviously, the buzz wouldn't be there either, but...
No, I always say, people, you know, the GA and the GA, there was greater disappointment in defeat of a GA match, but there was greater escalation of a fantastic feeling about it when you won a Gaelic match. The soccer, just quite enjoyed. It was a great way to... but I give you, I used to train twice a week with the lads, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, I had some good times. I played in Dalymount Park for in the FA. Got the Carrick Rovers were a good team at that time, and I used to be left back, and I used to love it. And I remember when you think you're a good player, you know, you think you fancy yourself as a young fella coming through. I never forgot it. We used to play in a couple of lessons I learned. We played in the Steadfast Cup, which was a very good tournament. A fella called Barry Keogh played centre midfield for Bank Rovers, but he also played for Dundalk. Done his trial with Man United. Remember, he was diagnosed with cancer even at that early stage, but he lived a long time. Unfortunately, that man has passed away. But I remember I was given a man marking job on him in a Steadfast Cup game out in Carrickmacross. Well, he just mesmerised me. Brendan, and here's a guy that was maybe just trying to break into the dog team. He was in a different level completely to me.
Yeah,
I remember playing Cherry Orchard in the FAI Junior Cup one time, and they had about 9 junior internationals on it, and they beat us 7-0. Absolutely put soccer out of my head. Put soccer out of my head, you know. But
the pass and move, Pat. You even had a hurley in your hand a few times.
You were
a bit of boarding school. Pat, you're a man of many talents. I didn't realize all this. There's many sports you couldn't have done, but unfortunately, Pat, you picked up an injury, which then led to the start of refereeing. What happened? Was that during a Gaelic match or what happened?
No, that was during a Steadfast Cup game. You remember a guy called Declan Flanagan played with Monaghan, a red-haired fella?
Yeah.
He played from Cassablanca, yeah. I mean, Sean McCaig, the former Monaghan manager. The Monaghan lads used to have to drag him away from the television to get him to come county training. You know, he was good footballer. He had that awkward left foot style, but good footballer. But he had very little interest in there. It was a story told about him, like they had to drag him away from the High Chaparral. Do you remember the High Chaparral? It's before your day, son, you know. But McNally was, Flanagan was in watching the television, and he the boys went in to collect them and had to wait till the High Chaparral was over before we go training, you know. but anyways, it was a clash with Declan Flanagan, actually, out in the field in Carrickmacross here, and I tore my cartilage at the time. I think it was about 20. And that time I went to, I remember, Dr. Scanlon in Navan, and it was like the cruciate now, you know, they had the big operation, the big scar on the, and I was above in the infirmary, above in Navan Hospital for about 6 or 7 weeks, and the doctor used to come around and grab your big toe and lift your leg off the ground, because your quad muscle had to kick in, you know, after the operation, and mine was so lazy, it wouldn't kick in. I must have been up there for about 2 or 3 weeks, got very frustrated with a cartilage operation, but that's where it all started, I think. Then in the following 6 or 8 months, I was just able to run in straight lines. And believe it or not, Porrick Duffy, if my memory serves me correct, Porrick Duffy, who of course went on to be the head of the GAA, was chairman of the referees. He was quite a young man at that time, because he's only about 6 or 7 years older than me anyway. And he asked me to come in and referee, and I come in to referee just at reserve team football level, about 22. I was 23 at the time. No, I was probably about 23 at the time. And the bug just bit me, yeah. The bug just bit me. I always say about refereeing, it's a bit like politics, you know, it's a bit like local politics. I don't believe there's anybody in local politics for the money. Now, people might disagree, but I don't believe there's anybody in politics for money, because I just don't believe that. You have to have a
grow. It wouldn't balance versus the hassle. You'd have to kind of love it, right?
Yeah,
the same
exactly.
As refereeing. You got
refereeing is something, most referees will tell you this, it has to get in under your skin. You know, it has to get in there. And if it gets in under your skin, it's something then that, you know, because you don't do refereeing. But I definitely didn't do refereeing to get paid for it. But it just gets in under your skin. And I thoroughly, I must say, I thought at that time, even back then, I said, this could be for me, you know.
Pat, listen, honestly, from you, you're the best ref by far of your generation. I've no problem telling you. I could back it up by saying you hadn't a lot of maybe people up against you that were any good. But no, honestly, Pat, for me, you were away. I can't give you a compliment about a wee back one as well. But no, honestly, Pat, what separated you from all the rest is simple as this: personality. You had personality on the pitch. And the amount of times that I got frustrated with refs who were counter-frustrated with me, and then my blood's up and something's happened and out comes a yellow and more or less you keep your trap shut. Whereas you, even from early on, but I remember getting upset with you and you were kind of like, hey, Brendan, calm down. You're all right. You don't keep it calm. Play the game, play the ball. And that was the difference you passed. And I think that style that you had, being able to connect with players, because of your personality, you weren't one of these where you guys run about throwing out cards or run away from people. You would engage with players. And I think that was the big difference with you, Pat. And I was just wondering, we're so used to you, Pat, here in Donegal, as just being a county ref. Of course, you like, obviously for years you were a ref club in between and Seagers and college. You've been doing everything. Was there much of a difference between it all? Because we would just see you in the big games, you know?
Yeah. That's a very interesting question. I take your point, you know, but I was, you know, Brian White was around that time. I thought he was an excellent referee. Paddy Russell. There was a few good referees around at the time. But you're right. I probably came in when there wasn't a great number, and there definitely wasn't, you know, a lad at 22, 23. I remember my first game going into Casement Park was Antrim and Wicklow, and the boys wouldn't let me into the dressing room. They thought I was trying to break into the referee's dressing room because I wasn't old enough. I had a baby facing me at the time. But, if you go back, I always say that, you know, was I the best? I wasn't, you know, I wouldn't say I was ever the best referee. But one of my big strengths was communication. There was no question about that. And, when I walk in the public game, you know, I've always been, I'm customer service manager with a company this long time. You know, I've been in the bar business a long time. So it's about dealing with people. And that's the big, and if you even take today, like, you know, running companies, managing people, the number one, fellas will tell you this, the number one ingredient in the people, you don't have to be over-intelligent. You don't have to be a brilliant mathematician. If you're good at dealing with people and managing people and handling people, it's a massive attribute to have. I was blessed with it in the sense that it was me game, you know what I mean? It was me game dealing with people, managing people, talking to people, and taking people with me. And I used to always say, like, people like yourself, I used to really enjoy managing players that was deemed difficult to referee in a pitch. And you were one of them. You know, but, and if you take, you know, people like Oisin McConville, you know, Oisin was much the same type of, Graeme Geraghty, Michael Donnellan, you know, I can name a few of them here that, you know, those magicians on football pitches. So there's a skill in handling them, you know. And I often tell a story about Graeme Geraghty. Meade played when Leitrim were going well. Leitrim were in Division 2 or Division 1 when Mickey Quinnan was playing back then. And referees found Graeme Geraghty very difficult to referee. And I used to find him a treat. But I remember when early on in my career when he was playing centre-half forward and there was a bike for Meade playing cornerback. He works for Heineken. Murphy, is he? Murphy. He was corner back with Meade, going back in them times. I can't think of his first name. I should know him. Was he Murphy? I think he was Murphy. But anyway, the game was on about 10 or 15 minutes, and he was already on a yellow card, and he was already maybe on a noting. And his next move, he was going to be looking in. And Geraghty was coming around by, and I called him. He wasn't even captain. I says, Graeme. You better have a word with number two, because the next time I'm talking to him, he's going to be looking in at you and at me. You deal with him. And I give Graeme that responsibility. And he took it on board and he felt, and you want to see the communication between me and him for the rest of the game, you know? And he went down and he had a word with Murphy, a cornerback. And I was always, I was smart. I was always trying to be intelligent on a football pitch. How do you make a difficult situation simple? And people like Michael Donnan, people like yourself, people like Oisin McCann, you know, not easy players to referee, get frustrated easy, but gifted footballers, you know, and they're not always easy managed.
No problem. But listen, 100%. But tell me, you raised through the in the under-county scene, obviously doing Ulsters, All-Irelands, the whole lot. I'm just thinking about the build-up to All-Irelands for players. And, you know, people probably just forget about the ref in terms of build-up. You're there in the day. You obviously have to have a calmness and control about you, which you've got through your experience. Still in all, Pat, there must be a strange pressure on you leading up to it. Was any of those finals that you ran, you were thinking, you know, I suppose in your heart of hearts, you just want a good game, that everything flows and the best team wins. But that's maybe out of your control at times. But the build-up to these big All-Irelands, how did you feel, Pat, particularly with the first one? Did you sleep well the night before? Did you eat in the morning, etc.?
Let me just reverse, because I didn't fully answer your question about the different games. Was it different between clubs?
Sure.
Yeah, no, just let me add, because it was a very good question. And what I wanted to say about it was, you're dead right. Football, different levels of football was totally different to referee. And I want to make a point about this is, club football was great because, you know, there was a lot of mistakes made in club football, and it was great for your fitness levels because the turnovers were more. You know what I mean? The turnovers were more. Inter-county football was the easiest football to referee for me. Inter-county football was the easiest football to referee, right. Which some people might find. So you had all the skillful players. Yeah, you know, and when you're reading a game, there's the least number of mistakes read at inter-county football. So someone gets at a corner back. I know in my head where this guy is and where this team is going to be put. So I used to always position myself, you know, where's the best position to be on. And there was very, you know, there was a lot less turnovers. You know what I mean? So normally where you want to be on the football pitch, that's where normally the ball is going to be. And that's about reading the game. The football that I thoroughly enjoyed in refereeing and I learned the most from me, and it probably gave me the biggest exposure, was McCrory Cup football. No question about that. The amount of brilliant people that I met during all the Derry, Down, Armagh, and the amount of people that put a lot of effort into McCrory Cup football. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Saturday morning, 10, 11 o'clock, was brilliant football. Really, really competitive football. And then the other football then was Sigerson, which just brought a new level of lack of respect I used to have to go in with into Sigerson football with a completely different mindset. They were ruthless and I was ruthless with them. There was nearly no talking, no communication, no nothing. There was a win at all cost at Sigerson level. And it was football that really brought out the best in you and the worst in me, because if they were arrogant with me, my God, it wasn't a nice place to be now. It wasn't a nice place to be.
I can't imagine you being like that, Pat.
I'm such a nice
Maybe towards the end, you'd softened up a wee bit in that. I was just asking, Pat, about your first All-Ireland final. How did you feel? Because no one thinks about the ref the night before. Were you tossing and turning? Or were you quite content and just to enjoy the experience?
People's going to find this very hard to maybe take on board. I was more nervous togging out for Cardiff in a junior league match than I was refereeing any game. And people might find that amazing, but I used to be more nervous togging out for my club than refereeing. When I got onto a referee and it, I just thoroughly enjoyed it, Brendan. And even like, I've had bad games and you've come off the field and I'm no different than you, no different than any footballer. Those games that I didn't perform in, I didn't need anybody to tell me. I knew I wasn't good enough and wasn't good enough on the day. And that can happen. That happens. That happens in life. That happens as footballers. That happens as referees. But no, I used to, before a match, the day before, even if I was staying away, if I was refereeing down in Kerry or refereeing in Dublin, you're sleeping overnight. No, I had no bother sleeping. Absolutely none whatsoever. Strange one. People find that strange.
You'll be glad, Pat, I'm not even going to go into the 96 replay and a question you've had to answer a million times about Celtic half.
Well, I think it'd be remiss of you not. You don't want to hear.
I can encapsulate for you. And listen, what you said after, you're 100% right that you should have sent off 2-2 in McDermott and it would have been put to bed. But Pat, again, the heat of that situation, and listen, people never really hear an odd thing, or ref's a difficult job. I mean, my God, you have 30 fellas whose life is dependent on this result and you blow a free either way. I mean, I can only imagine what that's like in terms of tension. And you go all the way to the biggest game we have, which is All-Ireland final. Things is going on everywhere. I mean, absolute impossibility for one man to take it. And I mean, Pat, listen, fair play for doing it. See that way you're saying about being very calm, going into it. That's the difference between, I think, a top ref. I mean, if you throw somebody in there randomly, they would have a nervous breakdown. So your calmness is what makes you be able to properly ref the game. That's the difference.
Yeah, like I've no bother talking about it. And there was mistakes made in it. And as I said, four people should have went in that game. But I remember calling Paddy Russell over beside me and Francie McMahon. Lord of Mercy, is now dead. He was a brilliant umpire at the time. And I said, and my opening words was, boys, of all the time in the world here, the place is going mad around me. We've got all the time in the world here. I says, we definitely need two people, if not four people. And that's the decision we came to. And it would have been much better decision if we had to come with four people. But the great learning curve from that was there was a lot of heat after that game. There was no question about it. There was a lot of bad feeling and you just had to keep a low profile. But my dad died in 96, about a couple of months after that game. And that, to me, that was brought a real perspective into my life. The All-Ireland wasn't that important to me. And after him dying, he died at 69, and that was a big blow to us. And it took me a little while to recover from that. So it was a big learning thing. It really was a shot in the arm to go, hey, there is more important things here in life. And I've just lost the man. Yeah. Course, I just lost them, man. It was very important to me. And then the thing was, people would have said that I would never recover from that. I would never recover. And that was always the target. Could I recover from that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, your dad, the hero, the man who kept everything going to perspective, I think, Pat, even at the moment with life and that, we keep checking back and saying what's important and what's not. And the fact that it's a game sometimes gets lost, and then something like that there, just say, right, put it in its place. It's a game. People get upset about it and get in the high emotions about it. But at the end of the day, you're trying to do your best in the situation, and that's all that matters, Pat. And you did that. You did that the majority of times,
And I think, even in the current situation with the COVID, you know, tragically, you know, people have lost their lives in this. You know, which we must all remember. But it's also a great time for people to reflect. You know, people are now, you know, spending a lot of time back with their families and back in their local communities. And, you know, I'm sure people are reflecting on what's all this mad rush about, you know, in the world. I mean, a good friend of mine, a fellow called Pat Freeman, he's be one of the senior directors with Kingspan Group. And he travels all over the world. He's in Australia, New Zealand. And I just met him for a cup of coffee. He actually called to the house for a cup of coffee, doing the social distancing and all of that. He said, you know, he said was, if I don't have my world travel time in half, I've learned nothing from COVID. You know, with Zoom, which we're currently handling now, with Microsoft. You know, if he doesn't cut his travel by half, he's learned nothing from COVID. So there'll be a lot of things, a lot of lessons and a lot of things learned from our current situation.
Yeah, and speaking of travel, I remember traveling the other side of the world along with you, 2001, and as soon as we were on the plane, I remember I was looking around a bit, and you were like, people were moving about, the players were moving about, because we were on a big trip, and you went over here, Devaney. So I sat down, me and you started to shoot the breeze with a wild bit of crack. That was from the first flight, and I remember out there then the crack we had over that three and a half weeks or whatever.
What a trip, Devaney. I suppose, you know, one of the things about I was very conscious of the time was that you had the big stars, like not many people knew you back then. You know, not many. And Eamon O'Hara from Sligo was a young lad on that trip. Francie Grehan was on the trip from Roscommon. Dermot McCabe. While, you know, you had Seamus Moynihan, you had Daryl O'Shea, you had Anthony Toth, all them big star players. And suddenly you had these group of players who are sporadically around who weren't that well. And I was always very conscious of the them and you and the lad who wouldn't be lost among the big name, the so-called big names at the time. And what a trip, though. What a magical trip.
You know, it culminated probably in a serious night out in Sydney with myself and yourself having a dance-off. Michael Jackson, Thriller was playing, I think. And only Irish, someone out of somewhere, a Monaghan jersey, some guy pulled off the Monaghan top. You pulled on the Monaghan jersey. You were out in the middle of the floor giving it socks. That was hilarious because the guy then who took the top off, the bouncers were going to throw him out. But, of course, there's a big gang, us. Not really me, but there's a couple of big guys there. They're like, hold on a second, you know. Put them in. we had some great times out there, Pat. And you've refereed all over the world, Pat. Middle East, you know, America, Australia. Yeah, you've been everywhere.
Yeah, Brendan. You know the G has been very good to me. I've had a fantastic career. And people say, do I miss it? Do I regret? Absolutely not. I've done my time, and it was fantastic. Though, and was all over the world. But if you ask me, the number one trip was probably back then with that one. It was there was a few lessons I learned about that trip. Number one, I remember reading Tony Adams' book Addiction on the way out, and I read somewhere when I was over there about his career with Arsenal and how he used to spend so much time drinking and how he survived in the Premier League or that time back. But it was very real, because we were out there for 3.5 weeks, and from Monday morning to Friday night to the test match, you know, I was with you. We were training 3 nights a week. We were training 3 times a day. You were getting up, your breakfast, used to have a team meeting, used to go to the masseur, you trained at 12 o'clock, you went back to bed maybe about 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock, back up, bit to eat, training. It was a real professional setup that time. I never forgot it. And then from Friday night after the test match to the Sunday morning, we became alcoholics nearly. We used to. It was fantastic. It was what a lifestyle.
We were getting these daily allowance, Pat, which we didn't need because everyone was looked after. So we landed in Sydney. Every man had a good few thousands there. We just went flat. But you know what? I'm running a wee bit low on time in this Zoom. I'm getting used to the Zoom myself. I didn't realise it was a time frame in this one. But you know what? I'd love to get you on some now just to talk about the modern reffing and that and your interface watches. I know, Pat, you set up the Kick and Tee and that. That was one of your inventions and all, Pat. And
you've really done your research, because I always claimed the fame on that one, and you're right about I could tell you a story about that. We built 2 new pitches in Cardiff, and I couldn't believe that there was some goalkeeper who was going to dig up my pitches. And I was sitting on a committee at the time, and I came with the Kick and Tee, and I'd done my survey with the goalkeepers and health and safety, and we got it in. And yeah,
I didn't know all this about you. You're a man of many talents and hidden ones as well. But Pat, what a fantastic life so far. You know, I know you've sat referees boards and you're in the background yourself and Mick McGrath and Crowe and the boys there.
What legends.
I have three likely boys. I'd love to be flying the wall some of their meetings. But listen, for now, anyway, Pat McEnany, and I will be back on to you, Pat, because I want to talk about modern refereeing and that again, maybe a bit more time. And at the minute, Pat, time is one thing we generally have. So I'll give you a shout after a bit again. We can have a talk about modern refereeing and you being kind of the daddy of things now.
Great stuff, Brendan. Great talking to you. And my regards to all the Gael heads up there in Donegal. Fantastic people. Never forgot that All Ireland, the one with McHugh and Matt Gallagher and all those boys, you know. Fantastic, right. Fantastic.
It's coming for Monaghan. It's coming. You'll get there.
Jesus, what are we? You know, I remember talking to Anthony Malloy and the banks and the doctors couldn't be found for 2 weeks. You wouldn't find us for a month down here if we win one, Brendan. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Pat. Take care,
cheers,
sir.
Cheers, man. Good luck, mate.
Brilliant stuff from Pat McEnany, fascinating man, and definitely want to get him back on the show later, particularly to talk about modern refereeing and all that entails. Right now, we have, you know, a man with an unbelievable history he's packed into his life in GA, from being an 82 hero to the current senior team manager. We have Declan Bonner live on Zoom. Declan Bonner, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brendan. Delighted to be on.
Good man, Dick. You're holding up well at the minute in the current lockdown, still doing some bits and pieces from homework and setting up, of course, a master plan for the next All-Ireland.
Yeah, listen, it's been, near the best part of 10 weeks now, Bryn, and doing a bit of work from home, all right, for the company. And, keeping in touch with the players, and hopefully we'll see a bit of ball before the end of the season, you know.
Yeah, and Dick, just looking back at your life, I think a lot of people would need maybe two or three goes at it to even start to pack in what you've done so far. It's an amazing story, Dick, and where you found the time for it, I don't know, between your brilliant club career, county, management, you even found time to write an article, be a pundit with Oisin there in Highland. You've packed it all in, Dick, and you're still going strong. And I suppose on this show, I would love to talk a bit about your younger years coming up, and particularly, Dick, and for me, the evolution of your management from your first stint at Donegal to your second, and what happened in between that, particularly with the brilliant underage teams that you brought through and the success with that. But we'll get on to that in a bit, Declan. But I'm really interested in your early days. Your dad, of course, Dan, played for Donegal. You had a real solid GAA house. I mean, Pat McEnany there, we talked about the five McEnanys for playing with Carduff. You had the four Boners. Ross's Rovers at the start, Dick, and that's a team maybe a lot of people wouldn't be familiar with now.
Yeah, exactly, Bryn. And yeah, in fact, it was the five Boners. The youngest lad, Aidan, was a number of years behind us, so he missed
right,
out on a fair bit of football. Yeah, so it was five boys in the family. And you're right, yeah, my father would have played for the county back in the probably the 50s, around the 50s, and played senior football with Dunlow. So growing up, yeah, Ross's Rovers was the underage team. It was a Ross's team between the three clubs that are there now, Narrossa, Dunlow and Neave Mora. And we had some brilliant times, some brilliant teams, and we had a very successful period. I think 1977 we won our first under-12 title, and then for the next 5 years we went on to win under-14s a couple of times, two under-16s, under-15s, and we finished up in a minor league. And I think it was 1981 that the three clubs decided to break up and go back into formed their own underage team. So that was the end of Ross's Rovers as it was. But yeah, some brilliant years and five really great years in terms of success, you know.
And Dick, tell me that time. I know it's a way back then, but these guys were your teammates, it was massive success. Well, who was the pull on the clubs in terms of taking it apart? I'm sure you as a player was thinking, God, we could go on and dominate senior football here. Was there anybody saying, let's keep it, or was there a big will behind it splitting apart?
You know, from our point of view, the players that were there that time, and we were probably around 17 years of age at that stage, but then we finished up 17, 18. We would have wanted to stay on as the club that it was, Ross's Rovers. But there was a lot of, you know, at that stage, Narrossa had formed their own club back in 1976. So they were just a new club. Dunlow had their senior club, and then Neave Mora were also setting up. So those three clubs, and all of a sudden there was a lot of young lads in the area, and they decided, you know, let's get an underage foundation here. to help support these senior teams. And that's exactly what happened, Brendan. You know, as I said, over the years then, we were lucky enough, probably what up under us, that we went from a junior club in 1979, when a lot of our lads, I mean, I started playing in 1979 when I was 14, playing senior football. And we went on from 79, 80, and 82, 83, and we went from Division 4 straight into Division 1 in 3-4 years, you know.
You know, reading that now, Declan, I was looking at some of your history there about the 14. You know, I think I asked a couple of people that yesterday. I was down visiting my dad and that, and we were talking. I said, what age do you think Declan started? And the lowest anybody would ever go near was 15. Now, and you might think 14, that's a massive jump down again to 14. And by the time you hit 23, you were already getting involved in management and that, which was a sign of things to come, Declan. But just before we get up to that age group, soccer was pulling at you. You were handing off. You played a youth international, and you were up about Van Harps.
Yeah, listen. Soccer story is a funny story, because our household would have been a really, really strong GA household. And at that time, even though my brother Sean and Michael, who were older than me, and the younger lad Donal, were all played soccer and played, you know, regional soccer players. I didn't really get involved playing competitive soccer till I went to secondary school. So I would have been around 13 before I played my first organised soccer match. And I went from there probably over the next couple of years. I was playing for involved with the Republic of Ireland under 15s, and then into the youth setup over a couple of years. But yeah, those were, you know, I played under Father Michael Sweeney down at Fannett. Fannett had a very strong, it was nearly an All Donegal selection playing at youth level. And we had some very good sides, like say Eddie McGinley and Sean Ferry and all these guys were all playing. And I'll always remember one day, and you talk about player welfare, Brendan, and I think it was about 15, it was probably around about maybe March 81, and March 81 or March maybe 19, probably 80, 81, and half nine in the morning, Father Michael Sweeney collected me to go and play for Fannett under 18s against Home Farm down in Trialloch. And that game finished, whatever time the game was, at 12 o'clock, the game finished up around about half one, quarter to two. Car picked me up, straight over to Dewey, which was about an hour and a half away, played for the Ross Seniors in a Division 1 match against, I think it was against Glencolin Kill. That game was over, and I had to go and play for Ross's Rovers under 16s in a championship match that evening against Ballyshannon. So, you know, I don't think you would get away with it nowadays.
You know, I think it's funny how things have kind of happened now, and there would be an outcry. It probably was a bit punishing on the body. I went through a couple of things again. Maybe taking two games in a day, one or three, would have been pushing it a lot, Dick. But there was a kind of a buzz about that, Dick, because, you know, fitness-wise and that, it was no problem here, and you were well able to play at that level. So that team really needed you. And I suppose you felt that, where, you know, you were well able to handle both codes, and both teams really wanted you. And there was both different sets of guys there. And, of course, you being yourself, Dick, you know, you were making friends with these guys, and you wanted these teams to succeed. So it was very hard. I know it would be very hard for you now, as it would have been for me, just to say, right, no Gaelic or no soccer. We would obviously went the Gaelic route, but so many great memories from that time, which is hard now, because it's gone that way now, that you can't be anywhere at an elite level and play two games.
No, exactly, Brent. You know, and I'd be a great believer, especially in lads growing up, to play as many sports as they can. And I know the way things have gone over the last number of years, it's very difficult. Once you reach maybe about 16 years of age now, you'd have to make your mind up if you want to go down the GA route or the soccer route. And, you know, back then, I mean, if there was a game we played, I would have went out and played it. That was just, that's the way it was. And but no, it's different nowadays, to be quite honest.
And Dick, I noticed you even played a bit for Harps in 91. How did you manage to squeeze that in before the big one? It's hard to understand now, Dick, because people think, right, you're on the cusp of the greatest year, I suppose, of your life in terms of your playing career, just before the All-Ireland, but you're playing a wee bit of soccer with Harps. You know, it seems mad now, but it was different then. There was a decent off-season, and you must have been playing there in winter and what have you.
Yeah, we used to play. At that stage, Bren, you know, you played your National League games. So it was three games around maybe October, November, and then you had December, January, and best part of February off. So I used to go play in soccer for those 3 months. And, you know, I played under some great managers. I started off with Charlie and played a couple of times under Patsy McGowan, who was the infamous Patsy was bringing.
Same as
John O'Neill. And these guys were all, I mean, probably the only time it came to any kind of a, I think it was 91, and we were doing reasonably well. We were trying to get promotion back into the Premier League with Finn Harps. And we were playing a match, was arranged to play Cove Ramblers in Ballybuffet at 12 o'clock on a Sunday, and at 3 o'clock in McCool Park, when they go playing along for the National League game. So, but I, you know, both Brian, I think, and Patsy came to an agreement, so I played both games. I went over and played, came across the road, played the second match. So, yeah, those were changed times.
Should be talking about this, but some of your squad boys would be looking at now, saying, hey, hold on a second there, but we have a cup final. Listen, Dick, as we know, change times is right. Dick, and the whole thing of your 92, and of course, your brilliant run to the final, your insurance score, the punch of the crowd, is one of the most iconic memories of that day, and particularly from the area in Narasa. You know, it's not a big club. He's obviously come up the divisions on the back of a lot of your family in that as well. But such a proud time for you, Dick. And I mean, obviously, we can't go past that, because me as a young lad watching you, Peter Campbell's a great line about you. You were a defender's nightmare, but a commentator's dream, with the shock of hair. They always knew who had the ball in the corner. But Dick, and just an amazing time. I know the type of you, Dick, and you would have done that. You move on very quickly. You go on. But I can only imagine, having seen the boys coming back in 2012, what it must have been like for you in the local area.
Yeah, listen, it was brilliant. You know, we had probably come from 1990. We lost a number of finals. We lost 89 final at Tyrone after we played in 1990. We beat Armagh the final in 1998, Ulster final. And then we went to play Mead and Croke Park, and the game I felt we probably could have won, even though Mead were very, very powerful at the time. I just don't think the belief was in the squad. I think we were probably happy enough to win Ulster. 91 we lost Ulster final to Down, and Down, I think Down opened the door in 91, Brendan. They went on to win Dáil Éireann 91. So we felt we weren't that far away. And 92 we beat Derry. You know, it was a really strong performance, especially second half. We were down to 14 men. John Cunningham got sent off just before half time, and a really powerful second half performance. And, you know, I think getting over Mayo in the semi final was always going to be, and it wasn't a great game. There was a lot of nerves that day. But I felt once we got over the line against Mayo, even though it was Dublin, we were hot favourites to win Dáil Éireann, I felt we were in a real, real, real opportunity. And, you know, the word defeat was never mentioned for those 4 or 5 weeks in the build up to that final. We felt within the group that we were well capable of winning it. And it turned out that way.
Yeah, it was dream stuff, Dick. It's so funny in sport how, you know, that Derry game, many people talk about as the game that was in that whole season in terms of, like, backs to the wall. You know, Derry, of course, were an All-Ireland team themselves, won it the next year. And that Mayo game that most people never ever mention, or just, I remember being there myself in the canal end, and I can't remember too much about it either. I do remember actually a funny story when I joined the squad about Tony Boyle saying, when he was making a dart through the centre of the field, he might get taken about around about the mid park, and he says, you and Manus would be hopping off him for who was taking the freeze. I thought that was very funny, Dick, but you had a real high scoring record continually with Donegal, Dick, very important with the left foot. And then, of course, you had a few injuries towards the end of your career, and you went straight into management, Dick. And as I say, from 23, you had done some management with the club. Was that something, like, all the time you were imagining, listen, as soon as I'm stopped playing, I'm gonna go for the big job?
No, not really, Brendan, to be quite honest. I remember in 1989, I managed the club team, and we won the intermediate championship. I was only 23 at the time, and we won that intermediate for the first time with the club, which is brilliant. I retired, it was 1997. I got an injury. I had an injury 2 years previous to that there. I got a bad knock, which damaged one of my kidneys. So I was out of football for about 6 months at the time, and I just came back. And it was the Ulster semi-final against Cavan in 97. I got another wrap, and I broke 2 or 3 ribs on the same side. And I came off after maybe 4 or 5 minutes in the second half. And that was my last game. And I never really thought about it, to be quite honest. I got a phone call. I think PJ had stepped down after that defeat against Cavan. And I got a phone call to see would I be interested in putting my name forward. And, you know, that's how it basically came about. And I went straight from playing, straight into management. And, says you, the rest is history.
Yeah, well, listen, I even got the call myself, Dick, not long after. Probably Michael Murphy was on last week, and he was just talking about his early years. We done it all, and even though it was a lack of success, that the enjoyment, I suppose, and the buzz of him getting into senior football and how much he valued that time. And a lot of people might, you know, think just go straight to the to the glory times, and he was saying he was in his granny's house, I think, in Buncranny. He said when MacGyver phoned him, and you, I was at my mum's house. Martin McHugh was along me when you rang me, and I remember coming off the phone. I was a bit giddy with it, saying you'd called me into the squad. And
I had no choice. You were after scoring 13 points in the county final, so I had to bring you in.
You had to bring me in and try and train me how to play a wee bit more orthodox, maybe take you a job in your hand then. But listen, Nick, there were great times. Obviously, we came within a kick of a ball of winning Ulster in that first year. And Dick, that's what really intrigues me about you, because I know when you came in that year, football is very different then. And you lined out your team, you got a bit of buzz together. Michael Oliver was in training, the team, God rest him. Charlie Mulgrew was there, Matt Gallagher. And you created a good buzz, Dick, and no more than when McGuinness took the job, people were ringing me up at the time, what's Jim going to bring? And I says, well, I'm not too sure what way he's going to do his tactics or his whole setup, but I know he's very good in a group of players, and you were exactly the same. And that's a very, very important side of it, you know. But from that time, Dick, then, when you went back then in the underage management, now, as the story goes, you might correct me on this or not, you seen... Was it a trial game or was it some training you seen, maybe your lad, and you weren't maybe too impressed with what was happening and you decided to get involved? Is that how you initially kind of got involved with under 14s out there? Under 16s, was it?
Yeah, it was a development squad, so it was probably the 14s.
14s,
that's right. Back, I would say 2011, around 2011. And yes. Yeah, there was a number of lads from the local club, including my own son, Christian. There was maybe three or four other lads going up, and it was a Saturday morning, and just developing lads from the club, sending players out, and I was just, there was about 40 kids there, and I think Paddy Hegarty from Glen was the only guy really looking after him, and he had his hands full, and he just basically asked me to give him a hand, really, and I went in that Saturday morning, and as I say, this same the following week, and the following year then I looked after the development, along with Paddy Hegarty, we looked after the under 15 development, the southern area, and then the following year was the Buncranna Cup, so I took charge in the Buncranna Cup for 2012, around that, you know.
Yeah, and thank God for Paddy Hegarty then, Dick, because your influence over this underage then, you know, it was just remarkable, because Donegal's always been patchy. Underage, there might be an odd good team, there might be a few players come out of it, but there wasn't this continuation. And we could see it, you know, around senior games and that, whenever you started to bring through teams, how well they were set up and tactically, and also in the background, you know, talking to people, you really brought a professionalism to an underage level, which I don't think has ever been seen in the county, and we're reaping the benefits now. Like so many of those players, I think we might be up in the double figures, have joined the senior team. Now, a senior panel, which is very unusual, Dick, from underage, you know, any kind of success. But you won the Buncranna Cup under 16, then you won the McGuigan Cup. I think we beat Tyrone in the two finals, which is unfortunate for them. Then, Dick, you took the minors, of course, the famous minor run, won Ulster all the way to the All-Ireland final, you know, Dick, and again the following year to the semi. And then, of course, Ulster under 21 was to follow before you took the senior team. And Dick, that's what I'm saying. I've seen a lot of people get involved in sport, you know, and you came from an era before this big change. But you went back, Dick, and there was a real evolution with you as a manager. Did you go back? Were you planning and looking at other setups and looking at groups of players and how to get the best from people? Because the word coming through from these young lads, I mean, even at a training camp for an underage team, which I don't think was ever heard of in Donegal before, but talking to guys was involved, that was the making of you. What do you call the place, Dave? Was it down outside Ballyshannon there? You organised a training camp and that. So there are things that got like unheard of, but then when the success comes and you talk to young lads were involved, they were like things that get really made it. Cashel, I think you call the place.
Cashelard.
Cashelard, that's it.
Yeah, no, listen, exactly. Yeah, and yeah, we had some brilliant success, Brendan, and we wanted to create a good environment for those young lads coming into, and that's important, that, you know. And yeah, listen, we had a lot of good players. My belief is in Donegal, and I think every year there's brilliant players coming through, and it's how you nurture those players. And we were lucky too, in those years with good players coming through, and a lot of them now are playing senior football. And but that journey started way back to 2011 year for a lot of them. So it's 9 years on the go now. Those guys, 23, 24. And we had success. The one thing I believed in firmly was that you needed success also along the way. And we were lucky, as I said, we won Buchanan Cup, we won 17s, 18s, and 21. And it was important that we built a winning environment, because I'd always had this thing in my, you know, watching the Donegal Miners teams play against like Tyrone or Derry. You know, I think we were beaten before we went out on the pitch. So the one thing we wanted was to make sure that when we were playing Tyrone, that we were going to be fit to beat them, simple as that there, and get that ingrained. And we did do that for about 5 years on their age level, which was brilliant. And because they had the benchmark in terms of winning Ulster titles, being successful, and getting players through to play senior football. So yeah, we looked at that there, and a lot of, as I said, probably the gratifying thing about it all is those guys are now playing senior football, and you know, over the last 2 years, bringing those guys to win senior medals also, and having them playing with the likes of the Michael Murphys and the Paddy McGraths and the Paddy McBurdies, Neil McGee's of this world now, you know.
Yeah, and just from my own perspective, going covering games, Donegal always going down a very dark road from the obviously tactics of Jim's 4 years, which did rely a lot on the opposition, not marooning you. And that's the thing, particularly in 2012. You know, listen, along with their fitness and the brilliant players we had, but what's happening was then in the years, I think, particularly under Rory then, we were just going down this unbelievably negative road. You know, you think back to 2016, the Dublin game, we were 4 points down, they were a man down, we were still sitting in our box. You land in, and of course there was some criticism, and a couple of people were saying about you'd use defensive tactics sometimes, even with the 21s. But right from the off deck, the 3-14 to 2-18 game down in Killarney, just everybody was like, wow, what happened there? It was one of those games that just sticks out in the mind in terms of you were going to change the philosophy right up. Now, I know you can't go all out attack, but you can't win games by defending. And if you hadn't got that attacking ability coming from everywhere, which is a modern game, so you set about putting that right, Dick, and it must have been difficult for the team to come out of that then. So you really put a highlight on hitting high scores, and right up in the, everyone's talking there recently, but the 120, the Kerry game there last year, absolutely fantastic football, Dick. I know it was a draw game, you only won the match, but in terms of us as spectators, Dick, I think if you have a go and you look to outscore teams, anybody's supporter can go and enjoy the game and appreciate it. Whereas you're sitting in your shell, nearly waiting to get beat at times, it was just brain numbing. So you just, it was a breath of fresh air and fantastic for us supporters.
Yeah, well, you know, and I know Joe Brody was on about, you know, defensive footballer, we were playing it under 21. I don't know where, or and I know he was at our match the night we beat Derry in Ulster final. I think we kicked something like 3:15 or 3:16. We beat Cavan in the semi-final, scoring I think 3:14 or 3:15. We scored more, we had more scores than any other team that won an under 21 title. And so I didn't know where this defensive thing came from. Now listen, it's very easy for me to go in and say when I'm taking over a team that I want, you know, we're going to play attacking football. Yeah, we number one, you're going to be gauged some results. That's the bottom line. So the results have to be there. Yeah, we want to play a more expansive game, but we also had to get it right at the back, and that is the juggling act that still goes on. And luckily, I was very lucky that I've got a very good backroom team together, and that's vitally important, because the game has gone, even from Jim's time, and Jim done a fair bit of coaching, and he was managing and coaching, and he was the psychologist, and you know, it's moved on again, because it's just impossible. We have a large backroom team and a really strong and powerful coaching unit, and it's really, really vital. And you know, I think over the last couple of years, we definitely have made inroads. We still have a bit to get to, but I felt we were getting there. And hopefully, when we get back playing, you know, we can see that.
And of course, you have a great relationship with County Chairman Mick McGrath. You and him do fight it out to get things across the line, but you both understand each other very well.
Yeah, exactly, and it's so important that you have a chairman that you know that you can work with, and that's vital. And Mick's been there now. My couple of years as senior manager, but he was also been there when I was 21 as liaison officer and right through from the minors. So yeah, listen, it's not all plain sailing. We have our moments, but you know, we can work it out, and that's important. We're all in it for the good of Donegal football, and we want to see Donegal football moving forward, Brent.
Yeah, certainly. And just on the goalkeeper there, Sean Patton, who is such a vital cog to us now. I mean, he's an absolutely top drawer keeper. His kickouts are, they're mind-blowing at times, his ability on the ball, Dick. And I'm wondering, you somehow, he was going down the soccer route, you managed to talk him around to come and play in for Donegal, which again, Dick, is a huge thing, fair play to you. I'm just wondering about, from your 40th year playing, you were in nets, were you able to connect with Patton? You'd done a bit of goalkeeping yourself at the very end.
Yeah, he was kicking the ball about 50 yards further than I was. but Sean, I mean, one of the things that, you know, the way the game has evolved, and I mean, the restarts are so, so vital now. And, you know, I'd watched Sean when he played that season with St. Eunan's, and I knew then he had gone back playing soccer again, but his kicking was immense. And when I went to approach him, he was actually just coming near the term. His contract was up with Sligo Rovers, and I actually didn't realise at the time, but he had picked up an injury. So I spoke to him on to meet him on to bring him into the training setup one evening. So he said he would come over just to have a look around. So we came over, but he came in crutches and a boot on him, one of those boots. And I says, this doesn't look good. But he had a meeting, I think, that week with Cork City. And so between that, you know, within a week, we made the decision, or he delighted that Sean made the decision that he was going to concentrate on Gaelic football. And now he's been very, very good, you know, and really professional, everything he does.
Brilliant, Dick. Like, listen, we were so looking forward to a three in a row tilt at Ulster this year. We'll still get that chance whenever things resume. I was just wondering, Dick, around just taking you right up to current times, the stance from the GAA, a lot of people are saying it's maybe a bit too cautious. I know there's so many question marks around it, but do you think there's any possibility of county football this year?
I think there is, Brendan, you know, and you have to have that hope, to be quite honest. You know, we're in constant contact with the lads. And, you know, I know from all the lads want to get back. They want to get back training on the pitches. They want to get back playing football. Club football will probably come first, I presume. But I do believe there will be a championship, maybe towards the springtime or the autumn time, probably September, October. But I do believe there will be a championship. And because I think if we're going to wait for a vaccine to come into play, there'll be no football in 2021 either. So I see the encouraging signs are coming, the likes of the Bundesliga opening up, New Zealand rugby starting to open up, the Premiership now will play behind closed doors. So I'm sure we'll take our lead from those guys to see exactly what's going on there. But no, I'd be very confident that we will be back playing football and also that we will have spectators at matches.
Yes, good man. And Degan, just on the players now, is there obviously there's a training program for them. How do you monitor that or keep up to date with everybody? And has people got the ability to get out to do the running that they need to do? Has that been difficult?
Yeah, it's been challenging. There's no doubt about it. And it's been, you know, we started off first. We didn't really know when we were going to be due back. So you had to be very careful the planning of it. And then, you know, over the last 2-3 weeks, then it was more or less decided that it was going to be October time. So we had to step back a bit again. But no, the guys are doing their programs. They're working under the Paul Fisher and Aaron Kyles, the two S&C guys. And, you know, we meet up with them once or twice a week on Zoom meetings. So, yeah, they're in good form. They're as I say, they're itching to get back out like everyone else. But, listen, we're getting a lot of good work done. And, as I say, we're hopeful that we will be back in the pitch probably maybe sometime in August, late August maybe, and maybe a championship starting around mid-October.
Yeah, well, listen, Declan, thanks so much for joining us and for putting that life back into the county. And of course, two memorable seasons but behind you with the two Ulsters and going for three. We might get a shot at it yet. And Declan, thanks so much for joining us on the other day.
I was going to, Brendan mentioned, but yes, that might be for another day, the head of goal over in London, but we'll leave that for another day. But listen, Brendan, delighted to be on. Listen, every good luck with the show. You're doing extremely well.
Thanks, Declan. Appreciate it. I'll see you soon. Right, folks, that's a wrap. Episode 14. Two fascinating guys. A lot of stuff in there I didn't know about them. They started doing a bit of research, and great to have them on the show. Looking forward to next week's show already. Where one of my guests that penciled in is Alan Milton, the man in charge of running things at Croke Park, to give us a lowdown on what happens there, match day and day to day. So hope you enjoyed the show and tune in again next week. Thanks very much for now.
The Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.